Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Freebie Friday. As always, Freebie Friday is sponsored by JLD Hot Sauces and Knives. Guys, they have the best hot sauce anywhere. They have Bucholica. They have Thai flavor. They have the best selection of handcrafted knives for hunting, fishing, cooking. Christmas is past, but it's not too late to start the year off better with better hot sauce, man. It's better than what you can get at the grocery. I swear to God, I eat it every day on my eggs. It's fantastic. Go to JLDSharpSauce.com. Use the code SAINTS. Get 10% off your order today. All right, so the Saints aren't playing this week because it's a bye, and we got to fill the time, but I read a piece by a friend of mine. I've had him on before. It's been a long time. It's at Black and Gold Review. He's Bradley Warshauer. And he wrote a fantastic piece. Go there now if you haven't read it. Pause the podcast. It's fantastic. It really is, Bradley. And I say this. I don't say this lightly. And I'm not just saying this because I'm having you on because the piece is so awesome. The piece is called Welcome to the Upside Down. And Bradley, you explain your theory of it because it got me thinking on so many things. But explain the idea that generated you to write it and the thought behind it.
Well, first of all, appreciate the compliment. That's great. It means a lot to me. But this one, I was thinking my own way through the emotional reaction that I was having to the Saints. Especially around the Carolina game, really in that stretch between Dallas and Carolina where the offense was not just off, but like it was bad. It was really bad. And I have a few numbers in the piece that kind of establish a baseline for how bad it was. I
mean, we're the worst since 2007, basically the worst since the opening of 2007.
Exactly, exactly.
Which is dreadful,
right,
that September.
Exactly. Right. You know, under 5 yards per offensive snap, you know, stuff like that, which is just, it's unheard of in the Peyton era. And like I drew one comparison that you had to go back to literally Ditka to find an offense that over 16 games was as bad as the Saints were play by play in that one stretch. But in the end, though, that didn't matter too much because we got the bye, we got home field. The defense was wonderful, and we were winning games. And that's all that matters, right? So it's ridiculous that as I'm watching these games, especially the Carolina game, I'm getting angry. I'm getting mad, and I couldn't figure out why. Like, why am I watching the Saints win a game, but I'm getting angry? This is not how it works. I knew it was ridiculous as I was experiencing the emotions. So I kind of sat down. You know, we got the kid to bed, and I sat down, and I'm like, all right, I need to think my way through this. So I just started writing, and a lot of the time when I'm writing, whatever the topic may be, that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to almost figure out why I'm experiencing the feelings about that topic that I'm feeling. So what we do is we go through and we analyze how bad the Saints offense was in that stretch, and then talk about how good the Saints defense was in that stretch, because in that stretch of football between Dallas and Carolina, the defense was putting up numbers that they hadn't put up, not just since 2013 or 2000 with the Swamp Dogs, who let the dogs out defense. You had to go all the way back to the Dome Patrol to find some of the numbers that they were putting up in that stretch of football. And it got me to thinking of the identity of the team and how in that stretch, it really had completely flipped. We were being carried by a dominant defense,
and it happened like that. It wasn't like it was a gradual thing, right? They going into Dallas,
exactly.
They were rolling, you know, and the defense was good.
I mean, we were putting up 40-50 points a game.
Yeah, so it wasn't like you you started to see this in the middle of October. You're like, oh, Breeze is getting old. Starting to lean on the run game. And you could see it and you could point back to it. It was like the Saints were just crushing teams. And then it's like they went to Dallas and it's like the light went off on the offense.
Right.
And the light went on the defense. And the defense went from being good enough to win a Super Bowl to this behemoth that is wrecking people. And it was jarring.
Right.
It was overnight. That's the thing that I really liked about your piece, how you sort of put it together and trying to work your way through it. But the interesting thing about your piece that and you could talk about it is, you know, and it got me to thinking about, I don't know how old you are, but the 1992 Saints lost the playoff game to the Philadelphia Eagles, and it was sort of the end of the Jim Mora era. It was the fourth playoff game. It was the fourth straight loss. It was the third loss at home, and it was just heartbreaking. And you kind of knew it was over. But your piece, the thing that got me thinking about it was the reason that playoff game still haunts me, Bradley, is because that Dome Patrol, it led the NFL. They gave up 12 points a game, and they led that game 20-7 in the third quarter. And when you look at the Dome Patrol, you should say 20 points at home with a 2-touchdown lead at the end of the third quarter, that should be enough to win a playoff game. And it just all fell in on them in the fourth quarter, and they lost. It would have been one thing if they'd have lost 12-10. You'd be like, offense failed us again. But it was the defense, man. The defense let him down. Randall Cunningham hit bombs, and it just fell apart on him. And that was the thing that tied into your article. You started working through this fear of what happens if the Saints' offense fails us in this playoffs.
That's exactly it. You know, and the Carolina game stood out because, especially tied in with the Dallas game, if the Saints' defense is giving up 9 points, even in a quote-unquote bad Sean Payton, Drew Brees offensive day, that should still be, or it has been in the past, a 20-point win, basically, or close to it. So the idea that we were sweating out a win, a key win, in a game where we had allowed 9 points in the fourth quarter, kind of just blew my mind. I was like, what are we doing here? And it got me thinking also, because we'd also been talking about, you know, the Breeze for MVP hashtag that we've been playing around with, and sort of his legacy and all of these different issues, and the fact that, you know, he is an aging quarterback, you know, he is approaching the end of his career. As I was writing, I was thinking about how, you know, even if Peyton is here, which we hope he will be, I'm sure, beyond the Drew Breeze era, we're still talking about greatest player in team history, and, you know, the probably definitive sports figure in New Orleans history. And I was thinking also about how watching this team kind of carry me through different periods of life. You know, like I'm old enough from, you know, the 30s. I can remember vaguely early 90s teams a little bit. I remember being sad, you know, if Morton Anderson missed the field goal or something. I can remember the 5-0 start in 93 and the, you know, 3-8 finish. And I really have a soft spot for the 2000 team because that was kind of my first playoff appearance that I was really fully engaged for. But the Patriots era, you know, that got me through college. It got me through life changes like moving to the East Coast for a few years and meeting my wife. It got me through, you know, the beginning of my career, got me through jobs, and it kind of guided me back home to New Orleans over the years. This year, it's kind of coincided with the birth of our first kid. And the idea that this time kind of could end very, very suddenly, which relates back to that concept of this wasn't a gradual thing. It was just all of a sudden. Not to get too dramatic, but it makes you kind of think about how, you know, mortal things are, how limited things are. You know, for a long time, it just felt like Breeze would play forever. You know, and we talked about him playing until he was 45 years old as if that were a realistic thing. You know, and maybe it will happen, but it probably won't. And to realize that we could maybe weeks away from that time ending, a year away from that time ending, it's not that far away. it kind of blew my mind. It kind of made me think, wow, okay, I think this is why I'm feeling this way, because we are seeing this team shift into what it will become after Drew is gone, most likely. And that time is not far away. It's very, very close.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting is, you know, you think – I think the thing that I love the most about the column is that you put it in perspective of, you know, we are used to the Saints' defense failing us in the Sean Payton era.
Right.
Look, we had three straight 7-9s. Even in the year of the Super Bowl and they won, we went into the playoffs knowing the defense isn't really great. It just has this magical turnover fountain that it drinks from every single week. And that's not really sustainable. And what happens if it turns off? They're going to be screwed. And I don't know if that's going to make it through the playoffs. And it did, right? The turnover spigot did not stop. It happened in Arizona, in Minnesota, Tracy Porter again in the Super Bowl. Like, it never ended. But it was such a close run thing. And I think, you know, we have this feeling that the defense could betray us. But the thing is, it's sort of like in life, Bradley. As you have experiences, you know how to handle certain crises that you've been through before. You're like, oh, this is really bad, but it's a grandparent dying, or for me, it's a parent dying. Yes, it's terrible, but I've been here before. I know what it's like, and it's terrible, but I can get through it. Whereas, like, if the Saints are in a playoff game, and it's middle of the third quarter, and they're playing the Bears, and it's 28-27, and the defense sucks, and Eli Apple's getting roasted, the Dome will be uneasy, but we'll be like, you know what? We've been here. Drew will just outshine Trubisky. If he has to throw for 500, he'll throw for 500. We'll hit the reset button next week, and it'll be fine. But man, Bradley, if we're in that playoff game, and they're playing Dallas, and it's the middle of the third quarter, and it is 6-3. We are going to be freaking out because we're just not equipped emotionally to handle it.
Right. The idea that the offense could let us down. Well, I compared it. It's not as bad as this, of course, because nothing is worse than what happened to the Falcons in the Super Bowl. Nothing is worse, which means nothing is better than 28-3. But the idea, exactly like you said, we could go into a playoff situation with everything laid out right in front of us for the taking, and go into that situation the year that the defense finally came together, not just good enough to help let the offense carry us to a championship, but good enough to carry us there itself if it needed to. But then we could have a bunch of three and outs and have a couple of turnovers and score 12 points and lose the game. That would, you know, That would break us. It would break me. I could not. I don't think I could deal with that.
And here's the thing that's funny, and we're going to get to positive stuff in a minute. But you know, around America, people think, oh, the Minneapolis miracle, that'll haunt Saints fans forever. It didn't really haunt us. Like, people want it. Falcon fans, national media, they think it will, and they think they wouldn't get over. Like, I felt like I got over that really quick. Like, other playoff games haunt me forever. I'm telling you, if the Saints shit all over themselves and lose a playoff game at home, 14-10 to Dallas, that will haunt me for fucking ever. The Minnesota game?
Yeah, no,
I'm over
I completely
it.
Agree.
That was just, you know, my friend of mine, and he's great on Twitter, Skooks, he had a great thing the next day. He said, the Saints won the game against Minnesota, but then this weird thing happened, and they can't play football anymore this year. And I
remember
was like,
that. Yep,
I was
that's
like,
exactly
there you go. That's what it was. They won, and this weird thing happened, and they can't play anymore. And
it was the classic thing where, you know, Breeze played out of his mind in that second half, and then, oh, well, okay, all right, well, okay, we'll get him next year. We dealt with that.
Yeah, the thing is, though, as far as the positive is, I look at the Saints and this defense. You laid out the numbers, man. It's so good. Not that I'm overconfident, but I feel like playoff games, you look at even like the Saints and Philadelphia last year, like teams that go to the Super Bowl, they're going to have one of their two playoff games is just going to be a game that's going to age you. You're going to drink. You're going to drink so much, you're going to make Keith Richards blush. It's going to be horrible. And that's how Philadelphia was last year, right? Like, they barely escaped Atlanta. If Atlanta runs a better play at the goal line, Philadelphia might lose, right? The next week, mm-hmm. Nick Foles was unbelievable, and they cut Minnesota to shreds. So I feel like the Saints are going to have one of these three games that they have to win the Super Bowl. Like, it's going to be the game of our nightmares, isn't it? Like, it's going to be this 17-10 shit fest that we're just going to have to, like, survive and bear. Or am I wrong? Do you think they might click it on and they'll just roll through?
It's so tough. I'm thinking back now to the Pittsburgh game, which felt a little bit more classic. And the defense did this down. It didn't. I feel like a lot of what Pittsburgh did was Big Ben with a mission. Prove the Saints were somehow insulting football. Cam Jordan comment.
Like,
I thought
Pittsburgh,
that, as a side note, was a ridiculous statement from Ben. The idea that Cam Jordan doesn't respect the game because he cracked a joke or made a comment about Big Ben. I mean, come on. But that was Antonio Brown and Big Ben kind of going off on their defense. Defense did enough, and Drew kind of carried us over the top. That was fine. But I agree with you. I think in the playoffs, the defense will play the way we've gotten accustomed to this particular defense playing. And I think at some point, because of the nature of the defenses that we're probably going to have to get through to get to the Super Bowl or through the Super Bowl, more than likely they're going to have to carry us in one of those games.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is with this defense, and you laid out some statistics that it really set it home to me. I mean, this, to me, you know, we were talking on the podcast a while ago, me and Andrew, one of the preview ones, and we were trying to figure out the identity of this team. Like, what does this Saints team do that you have complete confidence in? And Andrew made the point. He's like, the thing that I have the utmost confidence in this team doing is smothering the opposing team's running game with a pillow. And I was like, that's pretty much it. Like, from day one, like, no one's run on the Saints. And it's weird to say that because, like you said, we're offense. But, like, the thing that I trust the most is their run defense. And in 2018, I don't know how valuable that is, Bradley, but I think that's it.
It's completely true, especially now that you kind of state it in those terms, because – they can do everything else. They can have a great pass defense for a great pass defense for a week. They can have the best Drew Brees passing offense ever. They can have a great dominant running game. They can win any particular way with special teams. They've done it every single way. But the only thing they have done every week is play run defense. I'm not really sure what to make of that either. I will say that, especially in the back half of the year, the pass rush has been really consistent too. And I always think about how I mentioned earlier, how that 2000 team is really to me. It was like my first playoff run. And of course we had a playoff win, where I was really old enough to fully appreciate it. But that ruined me for life in terms of appreciating pass rush, because if you're not getting 50 sacks, I don't really care. It's like,
what did they have?
You got 48. That's fine. 66, yeah. Something like that. It was close to 70 sacks. And
I mean, they had three guys with 10 sacks on the defensive line.
Right. If you go down the list, it's...
They had Willie Whitehead had 7. Willie Whitehead, for like most of the Sean Payton era, would have been the Saints' second best pass rush. We'd have killed to have a pass rusher that good, and he was like the
absolutely
fifth best guy on that team. Right, I mean, right, the pass rush didn't get to Pittsburgh, right, but... I just feel like this defense, it doesn't have – I mean, they may lose a playoff game because just weird – you can get football turnovers, whatever. I don't feel like the defense is going to have a game where they give up 30-plus in the dome.
No, I agree. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the thing that's about the defense that's sort of revolutionary to me is, like, you know, you talked about the 2000 team, but the 2000 team, it wasn't really linebacker-based, right? And even the good defenses that Sean Payton had, Vilma was really good, but Vilma wasn't, like, exceptional. the linebackers now, like, it's fun. I mean, Demario Davis, I remember the Saints signed him, and it was like an afterthought because they had missed out on Jimmy Graham, and they had brought Patrick Robinson home, and the same day they did Demario Davis, and he was like an afterthought, and he's the best linebacker the Saints have had since Ricky Jackson. Like, he's better than Vilma ever was, and I love Vilma. But it's just it's weird to see good linebacker play again. It's jarring. I don't even know like what to compare it to.
I think, man. Well, up till now, when somebody made a great play at the line of scrimmage, it was either a defensive lineman, or a Roman Harper or Von Bell or somebody coming in on one of those blitzes. Our linebackers, you get excited about a play they made, you know, 5 yards down the field. Now it's like somebody flies in there and you realize, wait, it's Davis or it's even Anzalone or somebody. And you're like, wait, what's going on here? I don't know what to compare it to because it's a completely different era of football from the Dome Patrol. But I will say that the Davis signing, it was one of those deals where you knew he had a great year last year with the Jets. But I assumed that was his career year and we would get 75% of that. I didn't realize we were going to get 100% of that. He's been exactly what he was last year. And that's probably low key one of the more surprising events of 2018 that we signed a linebacker who, coming off a career year, replicated the career year the year we got him. That's never happened before.
Yeah. Like, that was the thing. Like, he's a one-year wonder, and he's 29. Are the Saints buying right. are the Saints buying Pets.com at the height of the market? You know?
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
But, you know, this team, this play, how are you feeling about the playoffs? And what do you, you know, look, people will be listening to this podcast. We'll be going into the bye week. We're going into the wild card weekend, which, by the way, the bye is great because the Saints get to rest and it's fun. But as a fan, I think getting the bye and being able to watch four playoff games, knowing the Saints are playing next week and you're just watching to see who they're going to play, it is one of the true great fan experiences. So, guys, if you listen to this, enjoy this weekend. Like, it's just so magical. But who do you, because we're recording this, we haven't even done week 17, so we don't even know how, you know, we know the Saints, they won't play the Rams and they won't play the Bears. So they play 4, 5, 6. So they either play Dallas, Seattle, or Philadelphia, Minnesota, right? Of those three, like, who do you necessarily think is the best matchup for them? And who are you like, oh my God, I don't want it. I think the Saints can win, but I just don't want them to play this team because of PTSD from football scars in life before or whatever reason. You just don't like them. Who do you want them to play and who don't you want them to play?
I don't know. I feel sort of equally about all three. I don't see Dallas doing what they did in Dallas. That they, it was in the Dome. They're not going to hold us to, what was it, 10 points, or, you know, that's not going to happen again. Minnesota, I feel like we match up better with them now than we did earlier in the season when we beat them by 10. So I'm not particularly worried about them. Seattle's interesting too, because Seattle's run the ball so much this year, and you'd think on paper that would play right into our defense's strength. And I think it does. But Wilson is playing close to MVP level football.
And he never gets blown out. So, like, if you play Seattle,
right,
it's going to be a close game. Like, Russell Wilson, I think in his career, he's lost by more than 10 points, like, twice. Like, he just
– right.
They just don't get blown
out. There's a version of both a Dallas game and a Minnesota game where I can see us winning, you know, 28-17 or 13 or something. I feel like if we play Seattle, I would – relatively confident, but I think we'd be sweating that one out to the. So that's probably the thing I would like least. But it's weird because we're talking about this piece where I'm going through my worries and my issues and my anxieties about the team, but I'm still pretty confident in this team.
Yeah,
I think that goes back to the idea that it can play any kind of game, it can win any sort of game, And so maybe just the idea that they are back in the dome, kind of control the environment that they're going to be playing in, hopefully control the type of game that they're going to play. I think that makes us confident. I mean, the team is certainly confident, but I think we should be relatively confident as fans. I think we have that right for this playoff run.
I think the thing with Minnesota is, and I talked about it on Twitter, and I may talk about it in a column if they play. The thing about Minnesota is, I think I have an irrational fear of them because of last year, what happened in the playoffs, and because I guess as a fan, you just look at them and you and as a Saints fan, we remember them of last year, right? They were 13-3 and they were dominant, and I feel like there's this nagging thing in the back of my mind that's like that 13-3 team, Bradley, they're gonna appear at any moment. Like the Vikings that are 9-6-1 or whatever, like they're mediocre now, but like that 13-3 team is gonna magically appear like Superman any moment, and we don't want them. And I think with Dallas, I think Dallas, the Saints would blow them out because I think Dallas, like the Saints could be playing Dallas and it could be 7-3 in the middle of the second quarter and the Saints create a turnover and make it 14-3 and Dallas is done. Like Dallas cannot play a high scoring game. Philadelphia, they worry me just because the Saints beat them so badly. But I feel like Nick Foles, he never, even in the Super Bowl year last year, he didn't play three good games in a row. He played crappy versus Atlanta. They won. He played great in the NFC Championship. He played great in the Super Bowl. Like, I feel like Nick Foles, if he got them to that moment, he would be due for his Nick Foles 4-interception game versus the Saints, and I would go into that game really confident. So I probably would rank them. I would want Philly first, Dallas second, and Minnesota third as least team I least want to play. And I know my fears on Minnesota are totally not rational. I accept that.
I have the same fears about Philly because, I don't know, it's an idea of Foles as this January pixie creature that shows up in their roster and all of a sudden he's good, even though he's terrible most of the time. And I know he doesn't string those games together necessarily, but there's almost some kind of magical element to their whole thing. But at the same time, they were at home last year, right? Like they could, again, sort of dictate how those games were played. They could sort of protect them a little bit. I don't see Nick Foles outdueling playoff Drew Brees. I mean, that's the other thing, too, we have to think back on, is that Drew, has he had a bad playoff game? Has he ever played a bad playoff game?
He was awful. I mean, Minnesota just sort of shut them down. He was awful for a quarter and a half against San Francisco. Like that playoff game in 2011, right? They drove down. Pierre got the concussion, and then it went sideways really weird for the Saints for a quarter and a half. But like, by the end of the half, like he had figured it out, and it was like the Saints were down 17-14, and you were like, oh, San Francisco, you're in trouble because the Saints shit the bed for the first half, and you're only up 3, and Drew Brees has figured out your good defense.
Right.
You're in trouble, buddy. And like, I would say
kind of the same thing last year, right? Like,
yeah.
Where Drew last year against Minnesota had a really weak first half. The offense didn't do a whole lot, but in the second half, he was Hall of Fame Drew. It was the second half was one of his best performances ever. Maybe the Chicago game in 06, but that's so long ago. I mean, it was
that would be his worst play. And even that game, like that game was 17-14. And remember, the Saints tried the long field goal with the guy. I forget his name.
Billy Cundiff, I think.
Yeah, they tried the long field goal instead of going for it on like 4th-and-2. When they had grabbed that game by the horn, and that game was weird. I felt like that game, it was so close to tipping in the Saints' favor. Like, if the Saints could have got that drive and got it to 17-17, like, Rex Grossman was ready to crack. Like, he was ready to become Rex Grossman and disappoint that whole stadium. But the Saints just couldn't quite push him over. But
I remember Thomas Jones running at us, like, 20 times in a row or something, or at least it felt that way. We just couldn't do anything about it. Going back to defense, I guess.
That's one of the most miserable experiences when your team is so close to the Super Bowl and you know from like the beginning of the fourth quarter to the end, like you're not going. and you still have to watch
because
it's the Saints and it's the NFC Championship and you've never been there before, but you know you're not winning and you just – you're what you want is like right near you and you just have to sit and take it. Like it's – like that was almost – that was almost a worse watch. I would actually prefer the San Francisco loss or the Minnesota loss to just – no chance, and you're just waiting for it to end. Like, it was miserable. But before I let you go...
I think that ties back into exactly what we're talking about with this piece, too, because if we lose a playoff game, most likely it's going to be the scenario that it lays out where we're going to be right there. We can feel it. We can sense it right over the horizon. And if the offense is the part that doesn't get us there... That'll be rough.
It's funny though. The Saints have shuffled the bottom of their roster. Like, the only thing that concerns me is the offensive line health. And Sean Payton has churned the bottom of the roster yesterday. Like, all their linemen are wearing a ball cap tomorrow. They get a week off, so they're gonna have they're not gonna obviously have tackling the week of the playoff game, right? So they're basically gonna get almost 3 full weeks of rest. Maybe it'll help them. I feel like. We talk about Armstead all the time, Bradley, but I look at Ramchak, and that dude, his ankle's hurt. He's got the armor thing like RoboCop. Like, I feel like he is really beat to hell, and he's low-key under the radar. So that's my biggest worry. Before I get you out of here, what's your biggest worry for the Saints going to the playoffs? And who's a guy that, if I told you, one guy that's not a star can just kill it for the Saints for 2 playoff games, who would you pick?
I think there's a good chance that we might finally see the Tre'Quan Smith that we've been kind of hoping that he hoped. And he's had flashes of it, and then he's disappeared for most of the year. But every now and then you see kind of that long stride speed guy that we hope we got in the second round. He's my pick because somebody's going to step up. Drew's going to have numbers at some point. Somebody's got to catch those passes, and it's not always going to be Mike Thomas. Tre'Quan's my guy these playoffs. I'm very hopeful about Tre'Quan.
And your biggest worry?
My biggest worry is exactly what we've talked about, man. Like, if we get to a shootout, it'll be crazy. It'll drive us all insane. Twitter will be a mess. but we've been there. We've done that. And if we get into a shootout, even if we lose, at least in the ride, we know that we have the better quarterback. But if we are in that situation that you laid out earlier, it's 6-3 in the fourth quarter. That's it. That is the biggest fear.
I booked my ticket for the first playoff game. The games are either going to be 3 o'clock Saturday or 7:15 Saturday or Sunday. So I booked the whole window. So I'm in New Orleans the whole weekend. It'd be one thing to lose the NFC Championship game, and they can't lose the first play. They cannot lose this first playoff game. They've got to get to the NFC Championship game. But I think, and this is just like the writer in me, Bradley. But I have this sense that Eli Apple has to factor into this Super Bowl run or the Saints not making it some sort of way. Like, he's been such a big acquisition, and he's helped so much, but he's been up and down. Like, he's going to factor in good or bad. Like, that corner opposite Lattimore, like, there's a story there. I don't know. And the good thing is I don't know how it's going to be. Like, I don't know that it's going to sink the Saints. Like, it might be okay. Eli Apple might be great, but he's going to factor in. Is there a guy that you look at and this will be my last question, then we'll get out of here. Is there a guy that you look at and you're like, that dude for the Saints, not a star, but he's a dude, he's going to factor in one way or another?
I think that it has to be Apple, and we could do an entire podcast episode on the theory of the second cornerback in the Sean Payton Saints team.
Yeah, no,
which
you have another
the short
great
version
piece
of
about
it is
Jabari
any year
Greer,
that we've
Jabari
got two.
Greer.
Right, any year that we've got two cornerbacks, we make the playoffs. Any year we only have one cornerback, we go 7-9, and that holds up every year. And we were on our way, I think. Maybe not. I mean, Drew was so good earlier this season that it didn't really matter too much. But Apple acquisition settled that second cornerback spot. So as long as we have cornerback number two, whether it's Apple or whether it's somehow a resurrected Ken Crawley coming off the bench, It'll have to be Apple. It's supposed to be real. I think we'll be fine. But that means that if something happens to Apple or to Lattimore, to either of those corners, things will get hairy. That is the tip point for defense.
I wish they could play. I wish the Saints had a roster of 90 this week and could just pull people out of the stadium. Pull people out of the stadium.
20 of them were cornerbacks.
Yeah, just like, you. Hey, season ticket holder, section 603, row 10, seat 20, come on down. You're playing corner. Like, I can't handle it. They've got to get through this week healthy. But Bradley, thanks for joining me, guy. Everybody, go to Black and Gold Review. Go to blackandgoldreview.com. Reed, welcome to the Upside Down. It's fantastic. They got other great stuff on there. They got culture. They got Americana. It's one of my favorite sites. I had him on because he's one of my favorite Saints writers. Bradley, thanks for joining us, guy.
Thanks so much, Ralph.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.